good faith in attempting. Pardon? Well, we don't shake hands and make deals and then not honor them. Evidently, some members of leadership do that over there.
I haven't shaken
a lot of my boots, but I haven't bought my hands.
Because you've had your hands in someone's throat. Senator Judiciary Committee, will please come to order. I'd like to take up several bills that the committee has considered before and has laid on the table pending action by the committee. First, House Bill 678 by Mr. Martin. The bill relates to membership in electric and telephone cooperatives and basically provides for cooperatives to...
It's a co-op.
It's called a G&T is its technical name. It would allow a co-op, one co-op to split into a G&T or several co-ops to form a G&T. And there's been no objection, and it's particularly important in your area, Senator Parr. Do we have a motion on that bill? The motion is made to pass Senate Bill, House Bill 678 from committee with individual recommendation. Is there any objection? Hearing no objections, the bill is passed from committee with individual recommendation. Next, I'd like to take up House Bill 668, Act providing for access to limited entry of other fish ticket information. We have the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill Number 668, originally by Mr. Sutcliffe and Mr. Fanning. This is the final committee substitute. Mr. Bruce, has the committee substitute been adopted?
No, it's just
this is the May 4th.
Yes.
It should say, the effective date should say July 1st.
Yes. July 1, 1984.
Yeah, Section 2 of the Act.
May I have a motion to adopt the committee substitute?
Mr. Chairman, I will make that motion. I just need to know whether or not this committee substitute meets with the approval of the plan sponsor, Representative Sutcliffe.
Yes, it does.
I've moved we adopt the Senate committee substitute for House Bill 668.
Is there any objection? There is no objection. The committee substitute is passed. The motion is passed. Motion made to pass House Bill 668 from committee with individual recommendations. Hearing no objection, the bill is passed from committee. Mr. Anderson, perhaps we worked on at least a portion of that when we worked in the Kennedy, but it was an agreed upon item by all parties. The Fish and Game Protection, Mr. Painter of the Fisherman testified in favor of, and Mr. Sutcliffe was in favor of it. Next, I'd like to take up HJR 77. HJR 77 by the Administrative Regulation Review Committee, proposed amendment to the Constitution regarding the normative regulations by the legislature. This is the Senate Committee's Judiciary Committee substitute. Mr. Bruce, has this committee substitute been adopted by the committee?
No, it hasn't. The amendment to change the effective date of the normative regulation in 30 days was the actual substitute.
I'd like to take a look. These are rather important.
I move to adopt the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Is there any objection to adopting the Senate Judiciary Committee substitute?
I move Senate Committee substitute.
Any objection to the Senate substitute adopted? Senator Anderson has moved the Senate Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 77. Be passed on committee. Is there any objection to that? There is no objection to the motion. House Joint Resolution 77 is passed from committee for individual recommendation. Senator Parr, your point's well taken. I actually did a commercial campaign for myself when the last regulatory question was up, and I'm It didn't pass in Anchorage, so that should be...
You got any opposition, Mr. Chairman? Frank actually did in my own race, but I didn't have time to get there.
Well, maybe we just ought to get together and cut a paper.
I think people just not really realize what is involved.
I would like to take up a matter briefly that will allow some representatives of the oil industry to take a look at an issue that is of concern to them. There is a bill which will be coming to committee, which we do not have yet, I believe. Mr. Bruce, have we received the omnibus bill with the university? It's my intent, should that be the intent of the committee, to separate the items in that bill, to separate the university question, the homesteading question, and the seismic data question, to allow you to deal fairly with that issue. Because of that, we won't take up any more of the bill today. If there are any questions on that point at all, I'd be happy to hear from anybody that is here for the oil industry. Bob?
Do I understand then you're not going to take up the
fiscal
part of that bill today?
No, I would like to put that in a separate bill. We will find a separate bill for that, and so that the bill travels on its own merits and not on the merits of another issue. Walker?
Well, would you allow the opportunity to have
and I will be only addressing the seismic portion of the bill. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Teresa Hebert, and I'm here on behalf of Exxon as attorney for the Alaska Pacific Division in the Anchorage office. As you may know, the Alaska Pacific Division is responsible for Exxon's onshore and offshore exploration operations in the state of Alaska. And I'm here on its behalf to address what used to be sections 11 and 12 of this bill, or the seismic bill. And I would apologize to members in the audience who have heard our points before the Senate Resources Committee, but at the risk of being deadly dull, I would like to forge ahead with our position. As you may know, this issue is one which is of extreme importance to Exxon. We believe that the geological and geophysical data and information that we obtain, acquire, process, and interpret prior to a lease sale form the basis of our competitive position in that lease sale. We consider this data and information so highly confidential and proprietary that very few employees in our company are permitted access to this information, and then only under very guarded conditions. In addition, this data is acquired at very substantial cost to Exxon, or some $15,000 to $30,000 per mile of seismic chute onshore. And a typical seismic chute, which runs approximately 500 miles, will therefore cost us anywhere from $7.5 million to $15 million. Then this data is processed at a cost of approximately $450 a mile to $1,000 a mile. We oppose, for several reasons, any bill which would require us to submit this data to the DNR prior to a lease sale at very little cost. Before I explain our position on this issue, I would point out that after we acquire a lease, we are required to provide all our data associated with the lease activities to the DNR. However, we believe that being required to forfeit this data prior to a lease sale jeopardizes the very confidential and proprietary nature of this data. Disclosure of this data, whether it be unintentional or intentional, would destroy the very competitive nature of the bidding system, in our opinion. In addition, this bill would allow the state to avoid paying fair market value for the data. We believe that such legislation would be counter to that provision of the Alaska Constitution, which provides, and I quote, that private property shall not be taken or damaged for public use without just compensation. Therefore, we believe the Alaska Constitution prohibits governmental taking or damage of our geological and geophysical data without just compensation. Having said all that, I would like to give you some background on this issue, which may place it in better perspective. As you know, we are currently in litigation with the DNR over regulations which purport to give the DNR authority to acquire this data prior to a lease sale. When we learned of this amendment, we initiated discussions with the DNR, hoping there would be some way to reach an acceptable compromise in view of the budget predicament in which the DNR finds itself. I might add that we're very aware of the problems which have given rise to this budgetary constraint, because we too are subject to the same problems, which have created the monetary problems for DNR. During the course of these discussions with the DNR, we proposed what we considered to be very beneficial amendments, which were later accepted and proposed by the DNR to the Senate Resources Committee during hearings last week. However, two very fundamental issues were not resolved, and that is why I'm here before you today. First, this bill would require forfeiture of not only our raw field data, but our initially processed data as well. Although we oppose the forfeiture of any data prior to a lease sale for the reasons outlined above, we especially oppose forfeiture of processed data because it is so highly confidential and proprietary. Keep in mind that raw field data is acquired at approximately $15,000 a mile, or $7.5 million for a typical seismic shoot, while it is then processed at a comparably insignificant sum of $375,000. So as you can see, the cost of processing, which the DNR is trying to avoid, is not the primary reason why we strenuously object to forfeiting our processed data. The major forfeiture of $7.5 million has already occurred if we provide them with raw field data. So as you see, it's the intrinsic worth of this data which is so important to us. In this regard, Exxon presented language to the DNR and the Senate Resources Committee, which would authorize the DNR to obtain our raw field data and all associated materials necessary to analyze that data. We believe this language was a substantial compromise from our position, both our legal and our corporate position. The DNR, however, found this language unacceptable because it wanted data which is processed. We next provided the DNR with quotes from three primary geophysical contractors in the state of Alaska on the cost of processing in order to show the relatively inconsequential costs involved. We hoped that not only would this information demonstrate that this is truly an issue of the intrinsic worth of this data and not an issue of dollars, but also we hope it would provide the DNR with a means to reassess its budgetary needs for processed data. These quotes indicated that processing costs range from as little as $450 a mile to $1,300 a mile. So as you can see, it is a rather insignificant sum when compared to the $15,000 a mile for raw field data. With that background, I would point out that under this bill, as referred by the Senate Resources Committee to your committee, the commissioner is authorized to obtain not only raw field data, but initially processed data generated by both group shoots and proprietary surveys. As you know, a group shoot is open to any party who wants to participate, and then the data that is generated from that group shoot is then open to any party who wishes to purchase that data. Normally, a group shoot involves anywhere from 500 to 900 miles, while a proprietary survey involves typically about 100 miles. Typically, Exxon will, once it has participated in a group shoot, it may want to study one portion of that group shoot much closer, so we will send out a geophysical contractor on our own behalf to acquire, say, 100 miles of a certain segment of the group shoot so that we can carefully study that segment. So as you can see, a proprietary survey is considered even more highly valuable to a company, and it's especially important to us to hold that data generated by a proprietary survey in confidence. Last week, we submitted an amendment to the Senate Resources Committee, which would clarify that if the DNR is authorized to obtain raw field data and initially processed data prior to a lease sale, that only initially processed data from a group shoot would be authorized. We believe that such an amendment constituted an even more substantial compromise from our corporate and legal position. We would ask this committee to seriously consider an addition to the definition of uninterpreted exploration data, which you will find in that bill, which would read as follows. and I quote, "It is also the intent of this definition that only raw field data and associated material necessary to locate, identify, analyze, or interpret the field data shall be provided in the event of a proprietary survey." We sincerely believe that the DNR's need to save the cost of processing data generated in proprietary surveys is far outweighed by our need to hold that processed data in confidence prior to release them. In closing, I would point out that this bill, as worded, would allow the DNR to acquire data which is being generated under permits issued prior to the effective date of this bill. In our particular instance, we applied for permits to conduct seismic activity, believing that we ultimately would not have to turn this data over to the state prior to release sale, because, in our opinion, the state lacks the authority to require that data. As you know, one of the superior courts of the state of Alaska has agreed with our opinion. To require data generated under these permits will deprive us of the opportunity to decide whether to seek the permit in the first place, knowing that the result of our efforts must be made available to the state. In addition, we believe the retroactive aspect of this bill will pose serious legal questions which may have to be resolved in another forum. However, in the spirit of compromise, we informed the DNR that we would be willing to provide data generated under existing permits if the bill requires only raw field data and associated materials necessary to process and analyze that data. Since this bill would require processed data, we must maintain our original position. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I thank you for the opportunity to express our views on what used to be Sections 11 and 12, resources substitute for House Bill 2. Again, for the reasons cited herein, I would ask this committee not to approve those sections in their current form. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions from committee members for Ms. Irving? There are no questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Dennis and I were talking previously, and it is my opinion that the issues ought to be dealt with separately. The university issue, the homestead issue, and the seismic issue should be put in separate bills, each riding on their own merit. That is the intent of the chair. I will use existing House bills so as not to prejudice legislation. And then put it back before the committee so it can be heard fully on its merit. Is there anyone who wishes to talk on any of those issues that are here on the Mr. Bruce?
I'm just saying I believe that Hubert was the only out-of-town guest, and perhaps if we split the items up on health bills, it may be easier to deal with it.
Ms. Sutton, will you be in town on behalf of the university when these matters come through, which will hopefully be within a day? We'll Fine. Let's move on next. Do I take up House Bill 210? Probably haven't if you read the memo, and what I do is if we just recess for a minute, I'll look out so I find the prime sponsor, Mr. Rogers.
Yes, question, Mr. Chairman. There's no problem with two separate groups.
No, they fit identical section and everything else. We'll recess for a couple minutes, dear Robert. Mr. Rogers, you have before there are two questions before us on the second section of the substitute. One is the question of whether we should and it is agreeable with you, and it is Senator Eliason's suggestion that a bill regarding child support enforcement or at least language that, because of time constraints, may not pass the House. Whether you would find it agreeable to have that attached to House Bill 210, because it is going over and will presumably be approved by the House.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Brian Rogers, representative from District 20. I did talk with Senator Eliason about that, and then checked with the House Judiciary Committee, and my understanding is that bill is going to move. That Flight 741 will reach the House floor.
Interesting, because it is not on a priority list, and it seems that at least my experience with the House has been very, if it's not on the list, they take a rather Prussian attitude towards it.
I understand that, Mr. Chairman. And
regardless of the merit of the bill.
Okay. The second thing is that because the Second Judiciary Committee substitute is somewhat weaker in its support for child custody, that may weaken its support in the House as well. And I'm concerned that the addition of the two might further weaken it to the point where we didn't have enough support for the bill on that side. My concern with the second Senate committee substitute, and this is a different version than the one I've seen Saturday, and the earlier version, is that there are three principal areas. One is on page 3, line 7. It says the court may award shared custody to both parents if shared custody is determined by the court to be in the best interest of the child. The earlier version is shall, and the concern there is that it is obviously then leave it to the court once the court has determined that it's in the best interest of the child. And my concern there is that with the good work of this committee and the factors for consideration, I believe the court has the items before it to decide whether or not it's in the best interest of the child. If there's violence in the family, it's not, and so on. And so if the court finds it in the best interest of the child, I personally prefer and believe that many of the House people would prefer a mandatory award there. Second one, similar to that, is on page 3, line 20. And this is a question between mandatory mediation and optional mediation. This version has optional mediation. As it passed the House, it was mandatory mediation. The third item, which is not as important, is on page 4, line 8, under cost of mediation. This version says, adds that the cost to be borne by the state if both parties are indigent. The problem there that could create for the House is, of course, it adds another referral. It's a fiscal mode. It adds another referral in this body, and that might tend to slow it down in the other House. My fear is the combination of those three parts that might flag in the House, plus 741, could cause us some real trouble. I haven't had a chance to get back to Senator Elias and let him know that.
Okay. We'll hold that. Okay. Let me take your points one at a time. So it was the original House language, though, was that the court may award shared custody if shared custody is determined by the court to be in the best interest of the child.
That may is in the House version?
Yes, that was the original House language.
It's been through four versions in the House as well.
And this is the four calendar Friday 4/16/82.
Okay.
And that was the original House version.
I stand corrected on that.
Quite frankly, what will happen, regardless of the language, is the court will make the determination of whether shared custody is appropriate. And if they don't find it, even if you have mandatory language in the statute, they'll say, well, it's not, they'll say it's not in the best interest of the child. So there's no way, unless you mandate shared custody in every case, regardless of even if there's only one parent. Language would lead to some interesting trouble. The second thing is with regard to mediation. Mandatory mediation, and it relates to your third point as well. It's doubtful whether we can have mandatory mediation without a significant fiscal note, based on the Flores case, which was a divorce case in which the right of parties to counsel was affirmed in a divorce action. And if we required mediation, the language was that the parties bore their costs equally. The indigent parties would, of course, not bear their cost. The state would bear their cost through the court system, through the appointment of attorneys, through the fund that's established in the court. I prefer mandatory mediation because I think that's what's going to work best in custody matters when you do have a dispute. On the other hand, I'd like to see the bill, passed, and that relates to the last factor. I think we can probably drop the language if Mr. Bruce is shuddering. if we have the right of the court to order mediation, but it's not mandatory, you can drop the portion that requires the state to bear the cost for indigence, because obviously in the case of indigence, we'll be able to mediate, which would be perhaps unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Mr. Bruce?
I did check with the court system this morning, and based on the court ordered portion that the court may order, that they saw that there would probably no problem with the indigent language, because A, they could either appoint an attorney from the funds that they get from indigent clients already, or they could arrange for, in some cases where they couldn't arrange for voluntary mediator, such as a minister or something. However, they did specifically note that some funds would be available. They could probably take them out of existing accounts, but if it was mandatory, the fiscal note would be about $400,000.
Mr. Chairman, based on that information, I think the combination of the May and the indigent language may be acceptable then, in order to avoid the further fiscal referral. But what I was trying to establish was we had those three areas plus 741, they start adding up, and that's my concern. Again, I hadn't had the chance to get back to Senator Lyason with the information that...
Mr. Lyason, Senator Lyason, would you join us at the table, please?
Senate Judiciary Committee, House Judiciary Committee does plan to move 741.
Okay. Mr. Lyason, as you just heard Mr. Rogers state, the House Judiciary has indicated that they will be moving Senate Bill 741, which this committee spent a great deal of time on, and which you spent a great deal of time on personally. And that is the reason for the request by Mr. Rogers that we not add 740, the language enclosed in 741, to this bill.
I didn't have a chance to get, as I told them, I didn't have a chance to get back to you, but you, the concern that had been expressed, and I looked over 741, I personally have no problem whatsoever over it, and I think we're probably going to get it once it comes to the floor. But I'm concerned that it might offend the sensibilities of some people if it were tacked on and passed over, that it would be perceived as pulling a bill from committee, even though the bill is intended to move from committee anyway.
I understand your concern in this regard, and we certainly wouldn't want to offend the sensibilities of the House, knowing the proper demeanor which they maintain on the floor at all times.
We have a 10-second recess.
We're in recess for 10 seconds. Mr. Rogers.
I'm confident enough that what I've been told on 741 is accurate, that I wouldn't have any problem with the bill. Perhaps progressing to a point where it was ready for calendaring, and perhaps they could both go on the calendar at the same time in an act of good faith.
That was essentially what Mr. Anderson was admonishing the chair with regard to. The Senate representative shook hands with the representative of the House on a matter relating to adjournment that unfortunately the House had to break. So we proceed with caution in these matters at this point. Again, we certainly respect our distinguished colleagues in the far House, but we need some assurance that the business of the people of the state will be done. So your suggestion is a very good one, and if that is agreeable with the members of the committee, we can hold this bill in the Rules Committee and request it back for an addition of language. The child support is important if the agency is going to function as effectively as they should. Is that agreeable with you, Senator Lyason?
Mr. Chairman, my concern wasn't so much the Judiciary Committee. My problem might be with coming out of the rules, because the fact it's not a priority in legislation. Because I talked to the Chairman of the Judiciary, and she was agreeable.
Mr. Rogers?
Well, Mr. Chairman, because the House is working a lot more smoothly now, I think that there's a much better opportunity to get bills on the calendar.
We'll inquire about that, and if it isn't coming to the floor, the bill will come back here. I will request the bill back in a flash so we can add the appropriate language. That's agreeable at all. With regard to the mediation matter, if we make it mandatory, we're going to have a fiscal note, and then it'll have to go to finance, which would be tantamount to delaying the bill or possibly even killing the bill. And I prefer mediation, mandatory mediation. Except I can't argue that there's going to be a cost to it as well. And particularly in light of the Flores case, and they really want to be guided by your instincts in this matter as well.
Mr. Chairman, I would feel comfortable after Kevin's explanation. I think the fact that the court feels it would be a zero fiscal impact to put the optional language in there, I feel comfortable in allowing that in there as a...
Yeah, next year this matter can be dealt with. We'll have some experience. Senator Park.
I'm just going to say, Mr. Chairman, that on 7/23 with Mr. Rogers, I made the same decision in the S committee that changes were made. Shall for that very reason, because with the fiscal situation this year, it might have been counted on.
Thank you
very much, Mr. Rogers. Is there a motion? Right, no, there's been no motion. I believe we need a motion to adopt the committee substitute. We've been through the pertinent points on it.
Chairman, move to adopt second committee substitute.
Any objection? Hearing no objection, the Judiciary Committee substitute, second committee substitute, House Bill 210 is adopted. Is there a motion to pass the bill from committee?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Anderson has moved to pass the bill from committee. Is there any objection to that motion? Hearing no objection, House Bill 210 is passed from committee. We do pass. Next, I'd like to bring before us House Bill 577. Mr. Anderson, please join us. Sorry to keep you waiting so long. We schedule these in advance and run down the line. And
I understand, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the bill that we have before us here, House Bill 577, is a bill that came as a result of work done by the Violent Crime Task Force on the House side last year. In traveling around the state, receiving testimony, the Violent Crime Task Force last year received a considerable amount of testimony from law enforcement people throughout the state about the need to repeal a section of the law that was put in the new criminal code when the criminal code passed in 1981. The law that was put in the criminal code simply made it lawful for a person being arrested to resist arrest. Mr. Chairman, if an individual is about to be arrested is of the belief that valid grounds for an arrest do not exist, and those grounds do not in fact exist, under current law that was passed in 1981, he may resist arrest by all means short of deadly force. Mr. Chairman, what the current law does, in fact, is encourage violence. Law enforcement people throughout the state, in making arrests, quite often as it is now and as it has been in the past, even prior to the enactment of the new criminal code, from time to time encounter individuals who, for one reason or another, choose to resist arrest and choose to use violence in resisting that arrest. The law that is on the books now only encourages further violence and serves no good public purpose. Under existing law also, Mr. Chairman, a person who feels that he has been arrested unlawfully or that there's not justification for an arrest, under AS 1181-370, he has an opportunity to, if he was wrongfully arrested, he has an opportunity to appeal it under that law. That particular law limits the use of force by police officers in making an arrest, and also the use of force has to be within certain bounds. In other words, he can only use a sufficient amount of force as is necessary to effect that arrest, and not any more than that. Mr. Chairman, I urge that this body approve this bill.
Mr. Anderson, we had this bill up in with one of the items in an omnibus act that we, in fact, 535, which is over in the House, which will receive some attention because it had a change in it with regard to the defense of insanity. I was the only member of the committee that was enthusiastic about the provision that was in the act that is now in House Bill 577. That is. Eliminating the justification for the use of force is my personal opinion. It does nothing but promotes violence on the street. It a citizen is not equipped to fight with a police officer whether they're going to be arrested or not, and it, it's not aggressive. I, however, was the only one in the committee that that took that point of view. I'm sorry that Senator Ray is not here. He would give you an interesting explanation of his concern over justification. Certainly, Senator Carr is here and had some concerns, well-founded concerns, with regard to that that particular section of the bill. That that is what has happened in committee. I don't know whether the committee has changed their mind or not. I would. There are a number of criminal justice bills that we have to deal with this year, and I'm going to deal with this matter if it's agreeable with the committee, whoever we're bound by the associated members. Mr. Parr, you discussed this along with Senator. Do you have any questions for Mr. Anderson?
Exactly what was in Fire 35, unfortunately, off the top of my head.
It
wasn't the same as this bill. It's not such a good black repealer as I remember.
That's correct.
No, it was not.
It's not a flat repealer. It made some changes, but it didn't just flat repeal it. I don't remember what it was.
Yes, it did not go quite as far as this bill. Well, if you should have a copy, it basically reduced the original language of the bill. Mr. Stern is here with us.
Yes.
Jerry, could you provide a brief explanation to the committee of the changes in 535 in the justification for the use of force in resisting arrest? There were changes were made in the Senate bill, and the House has a flat repealer.
I think the Senate bill didn't address the issue at all. But in other words, the Senate bill didn't change the law. Mm. That's my recollection.
The original 535.
As we submitted it to you, it did change. Yes.
I've forgotten what it was. Or what
it did. dealt with the issue of when a.
Let's see, Mr. Stern, it says a person may not use force to resist arrest or interfere with the arrest of another by a police officer who is known to him or reasonably appears to be a police officer, whether the arrest is lawful or unlawful, unless the force used by the police officer exceeds that allowed under 1181-370. This is the repeal of 1181-400 and the reenactment of it to read as.
You want to explain the reason for that?
Actually, Senator Ray is here with us. What we're dealing with now is a differing point of view between the House and the Senate on this particular issue. Senator Ray, Mr. Anderson is here on a bill that will.
Who?
Yes. Well, that should take him. Senator Parr, if you could look at that. We're dealing with the resisting arrest and the justification for resisting arrest. Mr. Anderson is here on behalf of a House bill that would repeal all justification for resisting arrest, or more correctly, the use of force in resisting arrest. And the 535, which was the Senate omnibus bill, had a provision which would reenact 1181-400. And both you and Senator Parr took exception to that. I'm not a good person to argue your side of the case since I was on the other side of the issue.
Mr.
Senator Parr?
I guess the only thing I have, I'm trying to think back, it's been quite a while back we dealt with that, but I'm looking to turn the bill and then say it that way. We're saying here that someone is going to unlawfully arrest you, and you have no right to resist such things. One of the things in here, the person knew the arrest to be unlawful. It doesn't sound exactly like what not many Americans that I've known have been willing to go that far. You know, somebody's trying to unlawfully arrest you, you're not supposed to resist.
That's my point, too. That's the only point that I have.
Well, I think the, first of all, prior to 1978, when the criminal code was enacted, we had a situation then that exactly parallels the situation that would exist if this bill were passed, this repealer bill were passed. As far as I can determine, there was no problem with the law at that time, prior to 1978. at least none that I could find. I think the important issue here is whether or not potentially violent situations ought to be handled out on the street or if they ought to be handled in the courtroom. We're saying with this bill that they should not be handled on the street between a person who feels that he's being unlawfully arrested and a police officer who is armed and trained to use violence. And we're simply saying that this kind of a situation should not occur on the street. It should occur in the courtroom. If the police officer is wrong, there's other state statutes that take care of him for using either poor judgment or intentionally using poor judgment in effecting arrest. We're saying the courts ought to be looking at that, and that the individual who might be under arrest or who is being placed under arrest, who might possibly be under the influence of alcohol or drugs or almost anything else, should not be trying to resolve that through violence on the street.
Senator Ray.
I have no trouble with that, but I've also known some police officers that don't use good judgment. And where do you come down with that? Where's the protection of the citizen who the police officer is sworn to protect, and yet he doesn't?
Well,
I mean, as long as we're
talking. I can understand exactly what you're talking about. And of course, anybody is subject to making mistakes. Any profession is subject to hiring people who are not entirely 100% professional. I think the main issue here is not whether or not some law enforcement officer is going to make a mistake, or if some law enforcement officer is going to intentionally place somebody under arrest when he should not be under arrest. I don't think that we can write laws to cover every single situation. I think what we have to do here is make, you know, in keeping with the tradition of law enforcement, is to keep violence to a minimum and protect life and property and so forth. And that, I think this bill goes to that end.
Yeah, but
Mr. Ray.
But at the same time, if there hadn't been these continuous abuses, there wouldn't have been a big resurgence of police brutality. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I'm sorry, I don't. I don't know that there is any big resurgence of anything, frankly. And certainly there have been.
All over the country is what I'm talking about.
Well, I'm not so sure that really applies to the state of Alaska. There certainly have been some cases, Mr. Chairman, of police brutality in the state of Alaska. I'm sure of that. Frankly, I don't know of any cases where it has been proven, or where a case has gone to court and it's been proven that a police officer has brutalized some person. If such evidence is available, I'd certainly like to hear about that. I, up to this point, haven't heard it.
With due respect, you know, you're talking just like a technical person, you know. Gee, if you could tell me exactly when this crime was committed, I would certainly do something about it, but the madness and all that. That's the reason why there's somewhat less than complete trust in our police officers right now.
Senator Ray, I only have my own personal experience to fall back on, just exactly the same as you must have. I can only use my past experience as in judging or helping me to judge what is right and what is wrong here. And that is the basis on which I testify. I don't know what basis your information comes to you on. The basis that I have to fall back on is my past experience in law enforcement. And many other law enforcement people throughout the state also testified in favor of this bill and the need to have this kind of a bill. And that's the reason it's before this committee.
I don't get any dialogue with you, Charlie. It just seems to me that if... this, and he insists on using, putting his hands on me to take me someplace, he's going to have a problem with me.
Now, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Anderson.
I don't intend to argue the point or argue with any member of the committee here, but as I stated before Senator Ray came in, AS 1191-370 of existing state code limits the use of force by police officers in making an arrest and the use of more force than is necessary is an unprivileged assault by that police officer. What I'm saying is that there is current state law that takes care of that police officer who, for whatever reason, might make an unlawful arrest.
Professor Stern, do you have any additional comments to submit to the dialogue?
I would want to. No, I think it's been discussed.
Mr. Chairman, one other point that I would like to make. I think Mr. Stern, testifying for the Department of Law, in House Judiciary Committee, testified in favor of this bill.
Yes. That is correct. He has been in favor of this bill since we have talked on the topic. And he is consistent in that regard.
I'm not in favor of it.
I get
that
impression.
At least 100 days.
How many members of the committee?
Strong-armed cops.
How many members of the committee favor the retention of the House language, repealing those sections of the statute that relate to justification for the favor repealing them?
I do.
You're in agreement, Mr. Stans.
Right.
I haven't signed the committee report today.
I haven't.
Let's go.
How many, all those people who would, which members would like to then repeal those sections 1181, 400A2, 400C, and 400D?
Mr. Chairman, in view of the fact that we've dealt with this topic once and just now had some more testimony from Mr. Anderson, but really, until we got here today, we didn't even think of this at all. I'm certain that in that much of a rush to sign the bill out, this is a House bill. There's no problem getting to the floor in time, right? I'd certainly like it to be held, at least if I can think about it. But I do have some difficulties because, as the members of the committee will know, there were proposed revisions of the criminal code in this before this legislature for about 10 years. Finally, we finally got around to having a task force, spent a lot of time on it. Then I noticed both Senate Judiciary Committee and the House Judiciary Committee spent a lot of hours on it. We adopted it. We gave it 18 months before it went into effect, so people around the state were used to it, knew what it contained. Then the instant it goes into effect almost, we have the people coming in wanting to change it. And I'm not ready to jump at making those changes. I'd really at least hold it until the next meeting or something if you'd like to do that. But
That's agreeable with the chair. I have prepared a committee substitute, by the way, that does not include that provision in the anticipation that the members, being consistent in their thought, would probably not find the House language acceptable. There are a number of criminal justice matters that we have worked on that I think are important to the people of Alaska, and such as telephonic warrants, certainly very important to Mr. Anderson's constituency, as well as my own, return of property, and it seems I've had a little luck with trying to get the free conference so we can resolve some of these matters. There are about five or six that don't have anybody's name on them, really, and they're not proprietary items of any individual senator, and I would like to see those resolved. And in the event the committee does not adopt the House language, I will move forward a committee substitute with several pieces of good and non-controversial legislation on them so we can either get to the conference committee or resolve some of the areas of criminal justice. I'm anxious to see about five of these matters resolved. They're matters that the committee has worked on, which do include, I might add, the change in the defense of the plea of insanity that I talked about this morning. We will lay House Bill 577 on the table until tomorrow's meeting. I'd like to take up next House Bill 575. Appropriate item. House Bill 575 relates to culpable mental states as an element of criminal assault.
What's the
number?
575.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to know from either you or Mr. Stern, since you're the two attorneys present, if there are any real differences between this and what was included in 535.
Mr. Stern.
Whether it's identical.
It's not identical, but in terms of any real differences, there are not.
Let me change the wording, Mr. Chairman. I don't mean the words are identical. Are the results identical?
Yes, they are.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Bruce, have you inquired Unfortunately, Mr. Cook has left the employment of the House Judiciary Committee. He was their attorney. He was the only attorney over there. Have you any indication by talking to the secretaries as to what might or whoever does draft the bills exactly what might be the?
Have we taken this up with the bill?
Yes, we have.
Substantially similar to language that was in Senate Bill 535.
But this came over first, if I'm mistaken. I guess not for the committee's rules on there. Protocol, first bill over, you acted on. And this was over.
Or by request?
Sure.
The original bill was by request. Do you mean request has a higher standing than a member of this body? I don't think so.
No, sir. I'm only saying that at least my understanding was that the protocol is the first bill to cross over is the one that gets acted on. And that is what's being held to by the person on the other side.
This was
for raised information. You mean representative request?
By request was by request of the House Committee on Violent Crimes, I think was the, right. And the other is the governor's bill.
Great. Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Johnson from my office, an attorney, is here present and would be willing to explain any questions you might have regarding this bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. We've spent a fair amount of time on this, on the language previously, and I don't think that the fact the committee passed it out and 535 is one of those portions of the bill which they liked. Which did pass first, Mr. Bruce?
Oh, no doubt about it, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 575 came over first.
when did that come over?
It was in
offered the 22nd of January.
Wasn't this incorporated in another bill?
I believe it was here in February.
So
February.
They don't want to pass the other bill.
Mr. Turn, just as a question of the origin of the language. This language is quite similar to the language that was developed by the Attorney General, actually by the Chief Prosecutor's Office, which you represent. Where did the who was the originator of the language?
Well, a lot of these bills came about, and they were sponsored by the House Violence Crime Task Force, but they were originally introduced by the governor and as one bill, and now the House Violence Crime Task Force has about four or five bills. I was the originator of the language.
Okay, that was my recollection as well, that you had actually written the language across the way.
I don't know if that's going to hurt the bill or...
well, said anything.
So what are we doing with it,
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Mr. Anderson.
You mentioned protocol as far as the passage of the bill that you have before you right now. The bill that I just testified on, I think, has the same problem, if you want to call it that. It was the first bill originated, House Bill 577.
Yeah, I'm actually willing to overlook the protocol problem, certainly, because the protocol only comes, you know, becomes important when the bill is neutral on its face. And because there appears to be some significant concerns among members of the committee, at that point, you slug it out on the merits. And,
well said, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't we just pass this out? We have the same, very same language, isn't it?
Pardon?
Don't we have the very, very same language? Charlie?
I'm not saying
one. We'll pass this up. Which we had the very same language.
Mr. Anderson, would you endeavor to have some of our bills move from the do you Senate House Judiciary? Mm-hmm. Perhaps if some of our bills could move, for example, the telephonic warrants and other matters like that. And there are some bills, and hopefully as we pass this thing, it'll kind of be reciprocal.
Well, to
you
show our good
same consideration that you receive, or vice versa.
No,
is that the way it goes?
No, wait a minute now. Let's not degenerate down into resisting arrest here.
I think you ought to. I think you ought to take it up to the chairman down there. She'll pass your bills out, I presume. I have no reason to think that she won't.
Well, to show you a good faith effort, I would move to put out committee substitute for House Bill 575.
I won't sign up until I see some good faith.
Any objection? There are no objection. Bill passed the committee. Any other recommendations?
We gave him one. We gave him a whole stack.
She took this part out of 535.
She took this out of
the car. Yeah, he's out of 535.
The car, right? She said if their bill was over first, we should have acted on it.
Yeah.
She took this
Oh, we'll do this and see.
I was trying to give Charlie a little
bit of a sense if we added that on. What's the difference?
I mean, who cares? Just leave the damn thing alone.
It's yeah. Important part. To do the job.
Here's the difficulty, Jim. Let's talk about this because we're going to you know, involve the, you know, act order.
Mr. Chairman, I had my presumptions presumptive here.
Your wires.
So that's what I meant. So what, I'd like to withdraw my motion.
Is there any objection to the withdrawal from the raised motion? Hearing none, it's withdrawn.
I'd like to make another motion. What is Senate Bill 535?
Yes.
I would like to put the provisions of Senate Bill 535 on committee substitute for House Bill number 575 and put that as a committee substitute? Yeah.
Senator Ray has moved the committee substitute. Yeah. Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute is adopted.
Okay.
Is there, may I have a motion for the passage of bill from committee?
Right.
It's been moved that House Bill 575 be passed from committee. Individual recommendations. Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, the bill is passed from committee. I will be a due pass.
Mr. Representative request got another one.
Judiciary Commission adjourned.